This is the Warrior Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Swanson, podcasting from gorgeous Mile High, Colorado Springs. The Warrior Mind Podcast is a personal empowerment series that provides you the information required to develop a mindset of a warrior, maximize your human potential, and achieve peak performance. The Warrior Mind Podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes and links can be found at warriormindcoach.com. Use the pull-down menu and look for the blog. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes, and please share this with your friends, neighbors, and relatives. If this is your first time listening, thank you for coming. If you're returning, thank you for your continued support. This is episode 481, and today I have the distinct pleasure, again, of interviewing Doug Staharczyk. Doug is the CEO of AQR International, and they are the developer of the MTQ 48 questionnaire, which is the mental toughness quota or mental toughness questionnaire. This questionnaire is fundamental in my coaching as well as my development of my clients, because it helps identify the specific mindset and thinking. And Doug and I talk about that a little bit here, is there's other assessments out there, but they all assess behavior, but they don't say what's behind the behavior, what the thoughts are behind the behavior. And this MTQ 48 is essential in dipping into a person's conscious and unconscious mind to determine their mental toughness. So I've interviewed Doug before. I've worked with Doug before. Awesome gentleman. They're doing some great work over there at AQR International. So this is kind of just a fireside chat, if you will. Really hope you enjoy. Take some notes. And if you have any questions and would like to participate in an MTQ 48, go ahead to the site, warriormindcoach.com. Scroll down to the introductory consultation and schedule that. And we'll talk about how you can implement the MTQ 48 into your life. Doug, let me ask you, how do you see mental toughness playing a vital role in today's current environment with what's going on?
With the corona? Yeah. Well, it's interesting because what we're seeing at every level in society is not exactly polarization, but you are beginning to see some people who see the opportunity, who kind of take it in their stride. Those are, we would recognize those as the more mentally tough in society. And they're not going to be thrown by it. They're just gritting their teeth and maybe even doing planning. We're doing a lot of planning now rather than just sitting there weeping about it. But you are actually getting a lot of people who are intimidated, frightened, they're almost paralyzed by it. And they just feel completely out of control. And they're more likely to be the mentally sensitive.
Right. That was the word I was looking for, control, because that's one of the four C's.
Yeah.
Right. And control of our life. So how do you see, how would you advise or help people understand what they can control? You know, again, trying to leverage one of the four C's, is how would you help people understand what they can control and what they can't control in helping develop this mental toughness?
Well, it's that is a really difficult thing because you can do it by showing people how to visualize a different scenario to the one that they're in. You can do it by getting them to see where they can find the positives in the situation and not just focus on the negatives. But ultimately, it's just as you say, we're in a position that we're in a situation we can't completely control. But we're nearly always in a position we can't completely control. So, question of saying, well, okay, what is it about this that I can control, and what is it about it that I can't control? And I might even have to rely upon others and trust them to be able to manage those bits for me.
Right. So
it is largely about adjusting your mindset and maybe keeping things in perspective. But the one thing we know about positive thinking, Greg, is
yes.
Positive thinking tools and techniques at times like this work great, only for those who already think positively.
So what I'm hearing there is, if somebody hasn't been thinking positively or neutral, and they're faced with a situation which we're faced in, and they try to think positive, it's going to be much more challenging for them because they haven't built up the neural pathways, if you will.
Oh, absolutely. And when you think about what's happening at this particular point in time, we are going into what they call self-isolation in the UK. I don't know what they call it anywhere else.
Quarantine here.
Everybody's on their own. And there are people who think that's fantastic. You know, I've always wanted to work from home. I've got my opportunity. I don't have that travel time. So they see the benefits, the opportunities in. There are other people, and there's an article in Lancet, which is the main medical journal in Britain, mm-hmm. which is highlighting that lots of people who are now working on their own are suffering from anxiety, they're developing mental health problems, and for them, the situation is worse than, you know, being in an office at risk of contagion. They're desperate for that kind of contact. So it's not an easy solution here. You know, sending people home, self-isolating for 12 weeks,
right.
going to create long-term problems.
Right. So is it going to create long-term problems for those that aren't as mentally tough, where the mental tough people have they can leverage the commitment, the control and all of that. So this is really important, because one of the things in my clients, and I'm sure you've experienced it, is that people are under some sort of assumption that they can just switch their thinking in one day when they've had a habitual way of thinking their whole life. And so it's important to start thinking, to develop mental toughness now, but those that have it are going to be able to ride through this isolation period a lot better. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, that's broadly what we're seeing. And you know, from all of the research, you know, we connected with some very, very clever academics. We know that mental toughness and mental sensitivity is normally distributed. And, well, something between 16 and maybe 20, 25% of the population anywhere is mentally sensitive. They're not responding well to what's going on at this present point in time. Mm-hmm. Roughly the same number, 16 to 20, 25% are mentally tough. They're just taking it in their stride, you know. This right. It's even exciting now to deal with all of it. In the right. middle, you've got people who kind of can deal with it most of the time, but occasionally something happens and it kind of shocks them a bit.
Right. Would you say that now is a perfect time for people to start to develop it that haven't? Or would you advise waiting through they come through this? Because I'm one that, you know, you act now. You if we're at home, we have the resources to do it. But what's your perspective on those that are mentally sensitive and helping them develop mental strength for the next crisis that comes along?
Yeah, I don't want to doom the mentally sensitive, but now is a difficult time. You know, a mentally sensitive individual is somebody who feels pressure and responds poorly to pressure. Not the best time to deal with them when they're under so much pressure. And, you know, the process for developing mental toughness is straightforward. It's understand yourself, self-awareness, reflect. What does it mean for me? How motivated should I be to do something about it? Okay, so what am I going to do? And then the big one is practice, purposeful right. practice. And we know that it takes 2 to 3 months to develop a new habit.
Right. So what I'm hearing, or what I'm not hearing, is that if somebody hired a coach to help them develop the mental toughness, this might be a perfect opportunity because they're home doing nothing anyway.
Well, that could well be. It could be not just a coach, but it could be a counselor. And it's right. curious, Greg, because right now what we're doing, all of our effort, we're seizing an opportunity, is to develop an online coachless coaching program mm-hmm. for this very situation. So you can send it out to hundreds of thousands of people, because there may not be enough coaches to deal with the number of people who need it.
Right.
And there's maybe not enough competent coaches either. That's a provocative thing
right.
to say.
Right, right, right. I think that, you know, there's that part of it, because I just put up on LinkedIn an article today that I wrote that this is the best time to hire a coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Is because when we are sequestered, quarantined, isolated, whatever that may be, our thoughts can start to, even mentally tough people, but our thoughts can start to run away from yeah, yeah. us. And it can get to be such a state of anxiety that people need a third party to bring them back into check. And I think, you know, a coach that has the mental toughness tools, I think could be in great demand right now.
And you know, there's an angle on that that I think is, when, you know, I've been thinking about it for the past 2 or 3 days. We've got some great international, genuinely global clients, and what they're doing is they are looking at the people they've sent home. They understand that those people aren't going to be in the best frame of mind when they come back, and they're not in the best frame of mind now. You know, you can't reasonably expect them to do in 8 hours what they were doing when they were well supported in an office. So they're beginning to look at solutions. They're beginning to say, well, it's not just up to the employee sitting at home. It's right. My job as well to do something about that person. Just because that person is at home, I'm still responsible for their well-being,
right,
or some aspects of their well-being. And we're beginning to see that. So that's kind of the flip side of what you're describing. You know,
right.
There's a demand, but who's going to respond to the demand? Is it
correct.
The individual or is it their employers?
Right. And I think there needs to be a co-creation around that. And let me just bring this to the how identifying where somebody is on mental toughness, which brings us to your awesome assessment.
Yeah.
Right. So people will sit there and they'll go, well, I'm mentally tough. I'm not mentally tough. And they don't know what aspects to work on. Now, there's 100 assessments out there, right? There's DISC, there's Myers-Briggs, there's StrengthFinder, there's all sorts of things. Help the listeners understand why you truly believe that the one that you've come up with is really the best one out there for mental toughness, and then what that can bring to the individual.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's not just me who believes it. It's almost the whole of the academic community worldwide. There are now 90 research papers. I mean, we're not academics. We're practitioners. Mm-hmm. But we want to make sure that what we've got is rock solid, well evidenced, based on sound theory. There are now more than 90 academic papers which support our work. The big difference between all of those measures that you mentioned, and you're right, even in the UK, there are 500 different personality measures. You can choose what you want. They are almost all behavioral measures. They assess behavior. So they assess how we act when something happens, when an event occurs. What we're doing is something different. Psychologists call it metacognition. What we're assessing is how you think when something happens. So what we're identifying is your mental responses, not your actual physical responses. And what the research shows is what you think, your mental responses determine to a significant extent your behavior.
So right.
If you want to change your behavior, you've got to ask the question, why do I behave that way? And that's what we've got. We've got that solution. We can help people to understand across 8 different factors what it is that's causing a problem for them.
Awesome. And that goes hand in glove with my TFAR model. Our thoughts lead to feelings, lead to action, which is the behavior, which is the result. And
if you just
try to change the behavior, you may be successful for a period of time, but ultimately your thoughts are going to win out over it.
No, absolutely. Sorry, Greg.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I mean, behavior is a funny thing because people will often say, oh, but I behave differently at home than I do at work, and they do. And behavior is a function of your mindset, your abilities, your circumstances, the support. You might have different levels of support at home than you do at work, so you'll behave differently. So behavior is kind of a bit like trying to hold a deli.
Right.
Yeah, but your mindset, what we see is, if something bothers me at work, it'll bother me at home. It'll bother me when I'm out there with my friends. It's pretty consistent. Your mental responses to things are pretty consistent. Mm. So, and they've developed over time. We know it's partly genetic, but we also know you've developed it over time. And so we've tapped into something that is fundamentally important here.
Right. So when let's switch to the application of business, and mainly leaders within businesses. How, because, you know, we're both on LinkedIn and we both see different articles come out there, and we see business leaders quoting different things, and I have clients, you have clients. How do you see, what type of effect, a trickle-down effect, does it have when a leader is embracing mental toughness and working to become more mentally tough? Because most people would presume they become a tyrant, right? They're going to become a taskmaster, and they're going to whip everybody into shape and quit crying and don't do this. But so how do you see the application of mental toughness with business leaders assisting their business and their organization and their company?
Right. So the very first thing, I mean, we're now, in the last 2 or 3 years, we've been banging this drum. We avoid the term mental toughness and mental sensitivity in the sense that the labels and people automatically associate things with. That's not helpful at all. A mentally tough individual will have a natural advantage in life. So the chances are they'll get to the top of an organization. The things, the qualities that work for them don't always work in relation to other people when they engage with other people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned control before. With a strong sense of life control, you've got this strong sense of can do. But if you're not self-aware and don't understand your impact on other people, your attitude can be, well, I can do it, why can't you? And that isn't helpful.
Right.
But if you create that self-awareness and get that person to understand, ah, right, so that's why people won't engage with me. I need to stand in their shoes, understand them, and engage differently with them, and I'll get a better response. That's when you've really hit the magic button.
Okay. And does the assessment help leaders identify those areas for improvement?
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is we've kind of stopped talking about mental toughness and mental sensitivity because we now understand that the right factors. Last time we spoke, Greg, I think we understood 4 factors. We now understand 8 factors. Mm-hmm. What we now see is even somebody who is mentally tough or who would be described as mentally tough might be mentally tough on 6 of the factors, might be mentally sensitive on 2 of them. Mm-hmm. But very rarely do we find somebody who's truly mentally tough on everything or truly mentally sensitive on everything. We're actually a mixture, and that's the key. You know, even a mentally tough person, I'll give you an example we came across the other day. We found somebody who basically scored high on every scale except 1, emotion mm-hmm. control. And he was completely unaware of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we said, you know, and he's at the top, a very big organization.
Right.
You have to think about it. And I said, look, when things go wrong, how do you respond? Well, everybody knows about it, he said. Well, a good thing to do. And we sort of said, well, you know, this is what this profile is telling us. Now think about the implications. Do they all want to know when you've lost it? Do they all want to know when you're miserable? Do they all want to know when things are going wrong? Is that the best response? You need to manage that response.
Right. So with business leaders, I'll just use the term alpha. A lot of them are alpha, whether it's male or female, right? Yeah. That's how they got up there. And in my experience, there's this tendency, anytime you give an alpha an assessment, they have to score high on everything.
Yeah.
And so when the results come back and they're more emotionally available, right? And they go, I don't want to be that way. How do you, or how do the people you work with, walk them through that? Hey, scoring top on everything might not be the best thing for you right now. So how do you walk them through that?
Well, Greg, that's coming back to something else we spoke about. Good coaching. Coaching is the key, because we learn from our life's experience. We learn from reflection. And some of us aren't very good at it. And in my view, if I was to define what a coach does, helps me to reflect on who I am and to learning from what's happened to me in my life. And coaches are by a long way the best solution. That's why we're trying to see if we can't bottle all of what a coach does, because coaches are remarkably competent and remarkably responsive individuals. You can't rely, until artificial intelligence comes in, we won't be able to develop, replace a coach. But we can do a lot of what a coach might do. At least we can get people to stop and think about themselves. We might not necessarily be able to then guide them through right. to a solution. But even if we can get people to stop and think about who they are and what the consequences of that are, surprisingly large number of people can then work out the next steps for themselves. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, if you can't get to that self-awareness point, you're not going to change anything.
Right. And so let's move from big business to the general population, even though there's people who work or business leaders. But again, getting back to what we're experiencing here, the question I have is, how do you see, and I know we talked about it earlier in the conversation, but how do you see the mentally tough people thriving or handling this situation versus the mentally sensitive? And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because people are listening to this, they're home, they're sequestered, whatever, they're going through anxiety, and they go, once this get out of it, I won't need to do mental toughness. I will need to do this. And what I would like to do as a coach is say, one, this might not be the best time, but it is a important time because this, we are going to face other crises, and you don't wait till you're thirsty to dig a well. And so how do you see just somebody taking this mental sensitivity, becoming mental tough? How's it going to change their life?
Right. Well,
and that's a big question, I understand.
The very short answer is the mentally sensitive individual is the person who feels every bump on the road through life. You get them to understand why they feel that bump on the road. So it's the same solution as it is for a mentally tough individual. You're beginning to get them to understand what it is about me that will be a problem for me. And the next step then is, but there are solutions. So you've got to give some sort of hope to people. But I'm going to kind of turn your question around a little because
okay.
What I'm learning is leadership is critically important. Many, many years ago, I was appointed, in my last proper job before I was a consultant, I was appointed to be head of operations for a big international company. It was done overnight. I was thrown into the deep end. And one thing I learned is you suddenly acquire a lot of responsibility. And it wasn't just responsibility about making money, profit, market share. It was responsibility about the resources you had. And the most important resource were your people. Mm-hmm. And I felt that pressure from the minute I took that role because I had about 1,000 people in the organization. Wow. And 1,000 people looking up at me and saying, okay, leaders, show us where to go. Wow. Was how to do it. So I think the practical solution to making changes to big numbers of people obviously can't be coaches in the short run, but if a coach works on a leader, the leader has a multiplier effect. Mm-hmm. What we know is from all of our work, whether it's in education or business or sport even, is that the mental toughness of the people at the top directly affects the people underneath them.
Could you say that again, please? Could you repeat that? Because that's a really important line that I want to make sure our listeners get to.
Well, if the person at the top is mentally tough, in other words, has a sense of control, has a sense of can-do, is committed to their goals and does what it takes, is not thrown by the events, deals well with the risk, seems to be learning from what they got, what's going on, and is confident. That's really important. Shows confidence that they're going to get through this, and people will follow them. Half the world's population is waiting to follow somebody. They're not working things out for themselves.
Right.
They want somebody to show them the way forward. And the person at the top, or that leadership team, sometimes is critically important. And what we're seeing is not every leadership team is as mentally tough as it needs to be. And sometimes it's the thing I referred to earlier. It might be they are mentally tough on six factors.
Right.
Suddenly the situation has exposed the mental sensitivity and a couple of other factors. And they're floundering. They are stuck. And if they're stuck, they can't work their magic on the rest of the workforce.
Right. What would be some symptoms? I hate to use that word in our current environment, but what would be some symptoms in an organization that the leaders may be too mentally tough, the tyrants, or not mentally tough enough? What would they see? So if you're saying to a leader, look down in your organization, are you seeing this, it might be an indication of your mental toughness or lack of.
Right. So if they were too mentally tough, the kind of indications would be they take on too much without considering the ability of the resources to go with them. And you will see that. We see that in organizations all the time. Mm-hmm. So, ultra ambitious, very mentally tough chief executive or top team. They're trying to pull the organization in a direction they can't manage. Mm-hmm. If you look at things like the commitment factor, people have got a high level of commitment, and that's the people at the top, love goals. They love working for goals. But we know an awful lot of people don't even think in terms of goals. Mm-hmm. They don't understand those. You know, they just live by day. They go to work. Yeah, I've made enough money today. I'm going to watch television and I'm going to go to work tomorrow. I don't think in terms of goals. Right. Goals can intimidate them. If they've got if they're too excited about the challenges and the opportunities, unless they're surrounded by the right people, they're going to scare people. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're going to drag people. You know, it's like if I suddenly said, come on, let's go and climb Everest. I actually have a friend who wants to climb Everest, and I'm not going with him.
Well, at least you can go to base camp.
Yeah, true. But, you know, not everybody wants to do that. You know,
right.
It might excite you. It might terrify somebody else. And so it's about not only self-awareness, but really understanding how other people respond to the same situation and being able to bridge that gap. And, okay, here is what I bring to the organization. Here are my really positive qualities. I'm going to minimize the negative consequences and optimize situation, and this is what I've got to do. If you've got a mentally sensitive leader, you'll spot that very quickly, and we do
right.
see those.
Right.
Because, you know, they're the people who hesitate, who clearly are not confident. I'll never forget when, you know, BP created that Gulf of Mexico crisis a few years ago, mm-hmm. and the chief executive was found a couple of days later on a boat off the coast of England, and he was complaining about his position.
Right.
How inspiring is that to...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I guess just to dive a little bit deeper into this for a few minutes is you have a leader up at the top, whether it's a C-level or something, and they're proud of their mental toughness. They've taken the assessment, they're doing great, et cetera, but they're not trickling down. Right, so they're not instilling this. It's more self-driven as opposed to organizational-driven. What are some of the behaviors in the organization that they might exhibit, if you look at it as that would give a warning flag to this leader, like, hey, you're doing a good job personally, but you're not disseminating this philosophy into your organization?
Well, that's little story I told you about earlier.
Right.
I was actually in a very, very successful international business. And what I saw, it was divisionalized and there were some really high-performing people. But what I saw was the development of petty polity. People began to learn how to deal with the guy at the top who was constantly demanding something. So they'd feed the individual fake facts or descriptions of progress. This person would believe it all. But he wanted to believe it because he was... You know, it looked like the picture he wanted to create and he would be responsible for. So you get to see all this, you begin to see lack of trust, lack of honesty, those sort of things. People do whatever they want, they can to survive.
Right. And right.
Go on.
Because there's a few, and I hesitate to say that they're mentally tough if they do what I'm about to say, but they think they're mentally tough, and they look at their organization and don't understand why they're doing something. So they start to blame the organization yes. for the results instead of looking at themselves. Am I treating these? So how would you help that individual, or have you seen that phenomenon?
Well, very definitely. And in fact, to blame others for things going wrong, an indication of mental sensitivity in the control factor. Yeah, because if you're truly in control, you know you're responsible for it, and you know that you can control it, you can do something about it. If you're suddenly losing that sense of control, you begin to look for somebody else to blame.
Ah, perfect. That's a great nugget there. I love that. I want to go back to the assessment real quick. So if I'm talking to a client or you're talking to a client, and there's been a lot of publications on mental toughness, the four C's and other stuff, and they read through and they go, yeah, I got it. I don't need an assessment, you know, regardless of the pricing or the time, but then I don't need it. How important is really that assessment for somebody to do that work, as opposed to just reading the information that's on the internet? Okay, control, you know, I'll set some goals, I'll stay with it. And right. So there's that part where people don't want the assessment because they think it might be exposing some weakness in them, and they'll just go on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's a common response to psychometrics in general. You know, people will sometimes be wary of it because it might expose something. It doesn't expose anything that you in some way don't already know. What it is doing is giving you fairly objective and often accurate picture of yourself. You don't have to accept it. There's no such thing as 100% accurate psychometric measure. What we know it out is a high quality measure. But the important thing here is, you know, we spoke about behavior. We can observe behavior. You know, the nice thing about behavior is I could sit down with my colleague Monica and say, okay, Monica, tell me about my behaviors, because she can see them. Mm-hmm. What Monica can't do is look inside my head and see what's going on in my head. And that's really the magic bit about the questionnaire. What we're able to do is to gain an insight of your thought processes. And there's no way you can do that with another person. And there's no way you can do that to yourself. You know, most people, when something happens and stops them in their tracks, most people just know they've been stopped in their tracks.
Right.
They don't understand why.
Right.
And so I would say right now, it's a perfect time for a lot of people to complete that questionnaire. I mean, there are some expert reports that go with it. To look at it and say, is this giving me a clue to my mental toughness or mental sensitivity and how I'm going to be able to deal with what's happening in the world at this moment?
Right. And awesome. I agree with you 100% that this is a perfect time to assess it, because while we're underneath the stress, right, the stress doesn't create, it reveals, right, the person. And this is a great time for those when things are going well. Yeah, I'm mentally tough, I can do it. When it hits the fan, then they fall apart. This is the best time. I'm totally agreement with you. One last question, Doug, is you've been flying all over. I mean, you've been to China, you've been to all over. Are you finding that the assessment and the results are becoming more, I don't want to say accepted, but embraced as a really powerful tool for change?
Oh, very definitely. And, you know, one of the challenges we've had is because it's such a radically new idea for a lot of people, is they take time to get on board. Everybody's familiar with Myers-Briggs or all of those tools.
Right.
We've been banging the drum about this. We've been building the academic credentials. That's important, because if somebody comes to me and says, right, but does it work? They can't just take my word for it. I can show them, look, there are researchers in universities all over the world, all agree this is sound, this worked, try it. And what we're now doing, I can't remember how many countries we were working in when I spoke, we're now working in 80 countries and growing.
Wow. All the time.
It is really growing. I mean,
wow.
And so it is spreading. We're finding some interesting cultural differences. But you know, Greg, the one thing that's almost constant is the average mental toughness score in almost any country we go to is the same.
Really?
Yes. So
wow.
The average is the same. The patterns are different, though.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So from what I would recap is the assessment is essential. Yes. For feedback. If the assessment is like a mirror, it's essential. Anybody who wants to feel more in control of their life, more confidence, you got to take the assessment first to know what you're dealing with, and then deal with a proper coach or counselor to work through that, whether you're a CEO or a garbage collector.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the key starting point. If you look at my most recent posts, they're all about self-awareness. That's what we've realized. Mental toughness concept is a great piece of psychological theory. The framework is a brilliant way to describe it to everybody. Anybody can use it. But the key is self-awareness. This is giving you an insight into understanding what's going on inside your head. If you understand what's going on, you can take control of your life and your development just a little bit better.
Wow, that's a great place to finish. That was a powerful statement. Doug, I appreciate your time today immensely. Thank you so, so much.
It's always a pleasure, Greg. I'm thrilled to do this.
Great, thank you. Monica, I will cut this part out when I get the editing. Thank you for putting this together.
Finally, you mean. As we say, yes, one day it will all work out. So it has worked out. And I'm very pleased about it. And it was really, really inspirational. And thank you, Doug, as well, because, you know, in those times, I think we should focus on some motivational speaking from your recordings for all our partners, coaches, because it could be something to maintain in a way to help them maintain the client's relations.
Yeah, well, Greg asked some great questions. And I think, absolutely. You know, maybe in due course, Greg, we might take a narrow theme and explore it.
Yes, I would love that.
And dig a little bit more deeply and maybe talk a little bit more about a case study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect.
A case study.
Awesome, I think so. And Monica, what I was going to say is we had the rest of our life to get this done. So, you know, if it took a month, okay. You know, at least it didn't take 20 years, but I appreciate both of you, your patience and understanding.
No, and thank you very much, Craig, as well. And great questions. Great questions. Great.
Thank you very much. And you'll send me the audio.
And as soon as you post it, I will repost it. And obviously.
Right. So what I'll do is I'll get the audio. I'll edit out this small talk. Yeah. I'll do an intro. Yeah. And I post my podcast on Saturday. I will let you know. I just got listed on iHeartRadio.
Right.
Yeah. So I have iTunes and a few others, Skitcher, but I was just approved for iHeartRadio. So this is a great show to put out there.
Fantastic.
Well, everybody, be careful, take care, be safe, love your family, and we will touch base again soon.
Definitely. Right. Thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to the Warrior Mind podcast. If you like what you've heard, please tell your friends and subscribe by your favorite RSS or podcast feed. And remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And unless you take your rightful responsibility to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.